This is WTIC's Computer Talk with Tab, hosted by Eric Semmel and Dennis Halnan of Tab Computer Systems. Interact with Eric and Dennis by phone at 860-522-9842 or email them in the studio at gethelp@tabinc.com. Get help anytime at computertalkwithtab.com. Now, here are Eric and Dennis on WTIC News Talk 1080.
And good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Dennis.
And we are going to be here until 11 o'clock. We are live on this lovely September morn here to help you out with your computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns. Feel free to get on early. 860-522-9842 is the number. You guys tend to wake up at 10:30 for some reason. I think it could be the broadcast antenna is like turned off or something until then. But we're here at 9, and if you want to talk about things earlier than 10:30, feel free to get online, and we'll do our best to help you out. And don't forget, also, we want to bring up we have a big e-cycling event happening on the 20th. Mm-hmm. We'll be broadcasting live from the Tab Computer Systems World Headquarters in East Hartford, where in East Hartford they felt it necessary to block our street. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
That's a whole ridiculous thing that we're dealing with.
Yeah.
But you'll be able to come on down and the hard way and drop off your e-cycling for free, and we'll responsibly recycle it with our partner environmental office out of East Hartford as well. Their street's not being blocked and for absolutely no reason. So you won't be able to take the left at the mural or the right at the mural, the beautiful mural that was painted
on. Yeah, to go either one street before or one street after and then circle around to get to where we are.
So we're looking forward to that. So mark your calendar if you want to get responsibly recycle your electronics. Also, your ink cartridges. For some reason, these folks at Environmental Office love ink cartridges.
I mean, they
You should see their system of keeping those things out of the landfills and repurposing them, refilling them. It's quite a production. So bring in your ink cartridges as well if you want to have them responsibly recycled. So as we talk about technology, we've talked about this a little bit before. So Anthropic. You might recall Anthropic is an AI company that found data on the interwebs. On the dark web.
Magically encountered it.
You're like, oh, look at all these.
Look at this.
All these books are all sitting here on this dark web here. I guess I'll have my AI learn from it, they said. And, it turns out they've been sued by the authors because basically – they didn't learn that with the Napster. You couldn't do that with music. Somehow in 2025, I mean, Napster was 2000, I think.
Well, yeah, sometime around then.
So we realized that you can't steal the artist's music
right,
for
and
free.
And it's a 25-year precedent here. I mean, it's not news, okay?
But somehow the artificial intelligence company, who clearly didn't have enough intelligence to understand you shouldn't be stealing from the authors, and you can't make this stuff up. It's so easy. They now have agreed... these artificially intelligent ding-dongs, to pay $1.5
billion. Billion?
So good for the authors. I think it's great that they're going to get paid by Anthropic because Anthropic was too stupid to realize you can't steal the way they did and make their AI smarter, quote-unquote, by doing so. So they're at $1.5 billion. So along with the data centers and the energy and all the silliness of the AI – the cost of running it. Now they have to come up with $1.5 billion to pay for what they did.
Right.
Good.
Yeah.
We'll put the link out here. So by the way, guys, just so you know, if it's copywritten, you have to pay somebody for it.
Yeah. I mean, a copyright is a real thing, people.
Right.
I mean, it exists. You have to, like, honor it.
Right.
It's built into the legal code.
Yeah. So Anthropic found out the hard way. Maybe they should have asked their AI, hey, is this kosher? but they didn't and found out the hard
way.
Well,
maybe they did ask the AI.
Yeah, who knows?
And it didn't know or it hallucinated that, oh, yeah, I can go get all that stuff.
Yeah,
I'll do that for you.
I don't know. It's nutty out there when it comes to technology and bubbles that are possibly there with AI. So we'll see. We'll see what happens there. They're going to cut some big checks.
Yep.
What else you got there, Dennis?
Well, in the world of law, we have another problem of another type.
Yeah.
In Indiana, there is a lawyer whose name is Mark Zuckerberg.
Really? Really? No relation?
No relation to the Mark Zuckerberg of Meta, a.k.a. Facebook.
All right.
But
that's going to cause some trouble.
But he does have exactly the same name.
Yep.
Spelled the same, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He is now suing Meta because they keep suspending his Facebook account. Okay?
Because he's impersonating Mark Zuckerberg.
Right. Now, I was saying off the air that I understand why Facebook would want to handle, you know, fake Mark Zuckerberg profiles
yes.
on their service
right.
because I'm sure there's millions of people
yeah,
that
we
are
all
generating
have three of those,
them,
at least,
right?
Right? Yeah.
But, you know, once you know the guy is, you know, bona fide Mark Zuckerberg, attorney from Indianapolis,
right.
you find his account ID that's, you know, some kind of a token buried within their system to mark his account.
Right.
You mark that as don't suspend it anymore.
Right.
How hard is that for them to do? Apparently, it is too difficult, and now they're going to go to court over it.
That's crazy, too, because, I mean, he's not paying for the service, right?
No.
He's the actual commodity, the Mark Zuckerberg that's mad that he's getting his Facebook suspended.
Yeah.
And he's going to sue them. It's interesting. I mean, the lawyer's got unlimited legal resources. I've always said, messing with lawyers, they've got unlimited legal resources. So I don't know why you're messing with them. Good luck to him taking on Mark Zuckerberg. Does he even look like Mark Zuckerberg?
I don't think so. I haven't seen a photo of him, but I would assume there's no resemblance.
Gotcha. Here's an AI story for you. So the UK government, in a trial of Microsoft 365 Copilot, that's Microsoft's AI,
right.
finds no clear productivity boost. Now, for the libertarians out in the audience, you laughed at that headline in the first place because government and productivity don't go together anyways, right?
True. What,
could the government even detect productivity improvements, you're asking yourself, as I was too? Probably not. Do they even understand what productivity is? Again, government tends to not operate in a way to be productive. So I find this whole study kind of funny. The UK department had a three-month trial, and they basically revealed no discernible gain in productivity. Asking the government to even check on productivity, I mean, is there a department of productivity in the government?
I wouldn't think so.
So I just find this pretty funny. Over 72% of the users were satisfied or very satisfied with their digital assistant, but they voiced disappointment. They voiced disappointment when the test ended, but there was really no productivity gains other than, I guess what they had some help writing emails or summarizing meetings.
Oh,
that's what they used it for.
Oh,
and we've seen that too. Now there is some cool AI that I'm talking to some clients about what they're trying to do with AI. There are ways, if it works, to gain productivity AI designed to do specific things.
As a matter of fact, I can think of a couple of clients that are using one of these AI engines that taps into your Zoom instance, for example,
mm-hmm.
and it will generate, you know, task lists from meetings that people had.
Yeah.
And it'll, you know, come up with like meeting notes for you. But
That's fine.
I mean, it's great, and it probably saves somebody a few minutes here or there, but really?
Yeah.
I mean, what savings are you getting? I don't know.
I just find it funny that they would have anybody trying to measure productivity in the government in the first place.
Well, yeah, that's kind of an issue, too.
So we'll put a link up here to the story. You can kind of see it's from our favorite blog across the pond there, The Register, and they weren't even cheeky with it. They're
really?
Just very straightforward. I mean, it really had a lot of areas where they could have been cheeky with it, but they weren't. And I'll put the link up there for you guys. The AI that I'm talking about is working with a client who's dealing with ordering parts, and they order thousands and thousands and thousands of parts to make these assemblies, right? And so they have to purchase all these parts, and they have to all come in. And so their customer needs a thing with maybe 500 parts, and they may not know if the part's missing or hasn't come in, so they have their lead times get all messed up. They're not able to guarantee lead times because they're waiting for a part. And the AI that they're looking at implementing actually is going to look at the purchase orders and look at whether or not it came in, look at lead times, actually communicate back with the vendors, try to tighten up the lead times, try to deal with not ordering more parts than they need that may not impact the actual delivery time. So there's some pretty cool AI out there if it works. Now, they haven't implemented it yet because they're still cleaning up their MRP tool, but it is still, that's where you want AI to help you, right? So it may actually reduce the amount of people in both the purchasing department and AP department because the AI can do it all for you. It'll even pay the bill within the terms. If the purchase order says that it's a net 30 term, the AI will pay the bill.
So, that actually does seem like a labor saving.
Yeah. Me. Yeah. So basically, you know, something that costs as little as $3,000 a month could save $180,000 a year in people. So this is where we are seeing AI impact hiring when it is implemented. We are going to start seeing this happening more and more with AI that actually works versus Copilot over there through the UK government. So we're going to be here. I'm sure Copilot's helpful too in some ways. But again, if you can't write your own emails, what can you do?
I mean, that's, I know. I don't know.
We're going to be here till 11 o'clock. Two lines open for you guys. So thank you for getting on early. Oh, we might have an update from Zig out there in North Carolina. I want to hear what he found out from Notebook LM. Remember, he was
going
to dump the EULA.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We were going to have, he was going to check the EULA changes.
Yeah, I'm curious to what Notebook LM told him those changes were. So two lines open for you guys. 860-522-9842 is the number. This is Computer Talk with Tab on WTIC News Talk 1080. All right, we are back. This is Computer Talk, like the lady said, and we're going to get right to your calls. We're going to go right to Zig in Wilmington, North Carolina. He was on the show last Saturday talking about the Microsoft EULA. You there, Zig?
Yeah, I'm here.
And we
can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you, sir. And so we had suggested to you to take that EULA, that 90-page EULA, Microsoft User License Agreement, and dump it into Notebook LM AI to have it tell you what the EULA said. Did you get any discernible information? Do you know what they're doing to you?
Yeah, I got two questions. I don't know if you want to ask a question. Not two questions, but whether you want to ask a question, I can either talk about the app that I downloaded. There's a story behind that a little bit, and also the takeaways from the EULA on what the answer was.
Yeah, I'd love to hear the answer first. To hear, so you took the information. There is no app you need to download though for it. You can just go on the Notebook LM site and have it ingest it. What did you get for an answer?
Okay, well, basically they came up with a man and a woman. The man was given most of the update.
Yes,
and the woman was going for clarification, and they were very, very human voices.
Right. Those are our AI hosts that we used to have on our program.
Right.
And they came up with about 10 to 12 bullet points.
Yes.
For office users, another one for maybe gamers, one for security, privacy, Copilot.
Yeah.
Cost. They specifically didn't mention anything about cost.
No.
But the takeaway is Skype, too. It looked like Skype's going to cost money or cost more money or something.
Skype shouldn't even exist anymore.
Well, Skype for Business doesn't. And they are phasing it out. So. Yeah.
But the particular one that they said the takeaway I got was, hey, don't read the whole 96 pages. Only go look at what is of interest to you. And so it was good information. Since they didn't mention cost, there was a cost heading or a cost bullet that had maybe 10 more bullets. I went back to the, the 96-page document, like they said. They said, don't bother reading the whole thing. Just read, you know, if you're a gamer, if you're a Skyper or a Copilot or an Office user, just read the section that applies to you.
Well, that's the dumbest advice I've ever heard. Right? I mean, Zig, it all applies to you. You're saying you agree to all of it, not some of it. You don't agree to what applies to you.
Well, here's the thing, though.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are some things that are of more interest to a given person than others.
Fair enough.
But when you've got a 96-page document,
right,
I need the help to find all that stuff.
Right.
And that's what I'm asking them to do. But, and instead, they're just telling me that's what I need to do.
But we grew up in the 80s, right? We grew up in the 80s, most of us on this call. And I recall in class, there would be examples of reading instructions where it was a paragraph from the teacher that said, yada, 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 yada. And by the way, you don't have to take this test if you write the word whatever on the top of it and you're all done. So people weren't reading the whole thing, right? They weren't reading all the instructions. They're spending all their time taking the test. And those of us who read the instructions would put whatever special word they wanted and we get our A. To have AI actually tell you to only read what's relatable to you doesn't make sense to me because you agree to all of it. So otherwise, Zig, do you now feel more comfortable working with Microsoft with their 96-page EULA explained?
Well, no, I got to clarify that. You fellows earlier told me about getting a local sign-on rather than signing on my laptop.
Yes.
To Microsoft, do a local sign-on.
Yeah.
And I've been doing that. And that was for the purpose of Excel, Word, PowerPoint.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been working great.
Good.
As far as I'm concerned, I divorced myself from Microsoft. Logins.
Mm-hmm.
So I was only interested, mainly interested if they were going to charge me in the future if I was logging into Microsoft and then they were going to charge me for Excel and Word and those documents. But I had pretty much eliminated that problem by doing that local, I think you call it a local logon or local service.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you can have a local user account, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, a local user account. So anyway, cost was really the only thing I was interested in.
All right.
Just to hear what they said about cost. And it was helpful because there was a section in the in this 96-page document that was a bullet of costs.
Yeah.
But now there's where nothing was really said. Under the bullet of cost was another 10 bullet items regarding services. Cost could change at any time. You're going to get charged for costs. You're going to automatically get, you know, subscription upgrades might happen.
Yeah.
When you take a free subscription, you might be a little bit of work to get out of that free subscription. So I found out enough that I'm going to continue doing what I was doing if that works okay.
Sure. All right. Sounds good, Zig. We want to hear about your download, the app download, too. So can you hold over through the news real quick?
Oh, yeah. Cause I got a couple of comments on that, too, because I hung up in the middle of the downloads and called you back, as you might remember.
Yes,
go ahead.
We could get to you. So we're going to get to it. We'll get to a break here. But Notebook LM is a great tool. Karen and Bob, right? Is that right?
Yeah, that's what we were calling them.
Yeah, Karen and Bob, the two people you listened to, they were the ones that were doing the AI description for Zig, and they were our AI hosts. But they just got so verbose and so ridiculous that we really couldn't even bother with a segment anymore with them because it's like they're trying to fill up time or something. They like to hear themselves talk.
Right. It's like having a politician around.
Kind of. But it's a great tool to actually have the politicians who have no idea what they're doing to us to actually ingest the bill that they just signed and say, find out what they're doing to the people. We're going to step out for a quick break. We get back to your calls. Joyce, Zig, and Mark, hang on. One line open for you. We'll be right back. All right, we're back, and we're on with Zig, and he wants to talk more about an app. You there, Zig?
Yeah, I'm still here.
All right, sir. So what were you talking about with this app?
Well, just a clarification on the answer that I got.
Yeah.
It was 10 to 20 bullet points, and they sent me then they said I'd save 55 minutes in reading. And in the app itself, it was 19 minutes of them talking.
Okay.
And they went over a number of bullet points in there.
Yeah.
But each one. But what happened with the app is I expected when I did what you told me with regarding to notebook lm.google to get a comment at the end that says open this now. And I didn't get that. I pushed some two buttons and nothing seemed to happen, and that's when I called you back once. And then a few minutes later the app shows up on there, and I said, oh, okay. And in the meantime I downloaded the app a second time, and I think I pushed a couple of different other buttons.
Yeah.
And I had the document open, and suddenly it said it was seamless. It took over and started analyzing the document.
Right, that you had open.
Yes, that I had open. And it said, don't bother waiting around. It's going to take a while.
Right.
And it did take about 5 minutes with what looked like nothing was happening. But I just got confused. It was some real geeky things on what the choices were.
Yeah.
I downloaded the app, and I don't remember what they were. It seemed like a one-page long list of numbers or something. Hmm. So that was confusing, and I didn't get the normal thing that says open this app now, and right. So that's why I called.
Yeah, I've never used the Notebook LM app, if there is an app.
I looked. There are Notebook LM apps in the Apple App Store and in the Google Play Market.
Okay. So you can, obviously they exist. I usually just use the browser version of it.
Yeah, that's what I use.
Keep it simple. But either way, it does take a second to ingest and have Karen and Bob figure out what they're going to tell you. You can even prompt them, though, to have it explain it in a certain way to a point. That's one of the problems we had with Karen and Bob, is that we couldn't limit them. You know, 19 minutes to describe 96 pages. Can you do that in 7, Karen and Bob? Probably not. And that's part of the problem with Notebook LM for us, for our usages. But it's great for anybody else who wants to use it to understand anything. The other cool thing about it is you can actually ingest other sources. So I think I gave you guys an example of the Inflation Reduction Act, right? So you can take that act right from the Library of Congress and put it into Notebook LM. And then you can have, the Taxpayers Association. There's some associations out there that I found. I had their take on it, and I put both of those things in for Karen and Bob to give both sides the actual act itself and what the Tax Foundation thought of the act as well. And you can then have Karen and Bob describe it. And you can add a third option in there, taxustodeath.com, and you could have put their link in there, and they would have explained why it was such a great idea. So it's pretty interesting where you can take this information and actually have it answered for you. But Zig, we appreciate you reporting on how it went for you.
Yeah, is there a am I confused? I thought you fellas mentioned Notebook DM. Google.
L is in Larry.
Larry, yeah.
LM.
Notebook LM is in Mary.
That's why we put the links up for you, Zig, so you don't have to figure it out. We can go right to computertalkwithtab.com and say, like, that's what they're talking about.
Yeah, okay. No, it worked fine then.
All right,
yeah.
Good. Okay. All right, Zig.
Have a good day.
You too. All right, so Zig reported on his Notebook LM. I recommend it to everybody. You, Karen and Bob sound like two NPR out-of-work NPR hosts, and they do a very good job explaining what's going on. Let's go to Joyce in Torrington. What's happening, Joyce?
Hi.
Hi.
I think I have a less confusing question for you. I need some advice. I try not to put my credit card on the internet, and I use I've been using a virtual set up credit card, and that works good with Amazon and so forth, and I've never had it not work except for local tradespeople. And I've noticed more and more people that are doing work in the neighborhood, plumbers, landscapers, this, that, and the other thing, they want to go paperless.
Yes.
So they want you to pay everything online.
Yep.
And if their setup doesn't their platform doesn't accept my virtual credit card, I'm forced to use my credit card, and I really don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if they want their money, they'll take a check. That's true.
Yeah.
However, what kind of risk am I would one be taking if they do pay all these tradespeople with their credit card?
Great question.
Over the internet?
As far as I'm concerned, if you're using a credit card, guess what? No risk. There's no risk. So if for some reason your card is stolen, you're not responsible for any charges. If it's your if it's your debit card, somebody could drain your bank account, and then it's a big pain because they take the actual money out of your account, and sometimes getting it back in is more trouble. So stay away from debit cards as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
And if you use a credit card, you know, typically you have a credit card that you don't mind if it get got compromised. When I say mind, it's still a pain in the butt. But if the card got compromised, it just means you have to cancel the card and then reestablish any auto pays you have set up with whatever subscriptions you have. But technically, God, you have no risk when you use a credit card. I think there is a period of time, though, if you don't notice the fraudulent charge, that maybe you may not be able to get it back.
Yeah, it might be 60 days, 90 days, something like that. I'm not sure. But there is a time window there.
Yeah. But I would say that very little risk. And there's other services like, you say virtual credit card, PayPal, Apple Pay, those are kind of...
Oh, PayPal, that didn't work for me at all. They somebody got into my PayPal and tried to get me to pay for some strange thing.
Oh.
So I had to cancel PayPal, and I also canceled the Venmo.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of scams out there that are trying to trick you into doing things.
Well, yes. What I was going to say is my own PayPal experience. Every once in a while, I'll look at my PayPal account and I'll see that somebody has submitted an invoice to me.
Right.
But they haven't gotten into the account.
No.
All they've done is just, they know that my email address exists as an account there.
Right.
So they just, on their side, in their own accounts, they create this invoice and then they want me to approve payment.
Yeah.
Right.
And I never approve payment. But That's not the same thing as them actually getting into my account.
Right.
Okay. I really think, what happened to me is more what you're talking about. They they did not get in there, but they asked me to pay for something.
Right.
And on occasion, just recently too, I get somebody that's saying your new Apple device, whatever, is ready for shipment. You can pay now and so forth.
But they want you to call a number for that one, and
yeah,
then they're going to trick you into getting on your computer. Those are more scams. So that can happen in the mail, too. People send mail with invoices, and it's not like you can stop the post office.
Okay. So if someone says to me, we're doing everything paperless, and please pay us with your credit card, and use our website.
Yeah, you can use one.
To transfer it, there's no risk.
Technically, there's no risk because your credit card has protections for you for false transactions. So you have very little to no risk. It's only when you use a debit card where they can actually take the money out. And if you happen to need that money, the bank may not quickly replenish it until they prove that it was a false.
I guess I'm wondering about how safe they are.
Who?
The people that I'm paying $1,000 to. Their system?
Oh, so basically they use merchants, credit card merchant companies that have to make sure that they're PCI compliant. So they are actually, the merchants that are dealing with these transactions don't want to have a lot of false transactions because then they're going to have to send money back. They're not going to be able to collect their fees. So they're going to try to make sure that the people who are using their services are PCI compliant, which means they're doing things correctly with their computers and their security.
How would I know that?
Because they actually have a ability to use a credit card. That's how you understand that they are PCI compliant. Technically, the merchants are happy enough with their security to allow them to actually bill you with a credit card. That's the only way you know.
Remember when people would say, well, your credit card, when you give us your credit card, we'll keep it on file, and it's locked in a vault.
Yeah.
And then I end up doing that with the oil company find out that somebody got into the the vault.
Do you go out to dinner, Joyce?
Pardon me?
Do you go out to dinner?
Yeah.
Do you give your credit card to the waiter?
Yes, all the time.
Well, they could do anything they want with that while it's not in your person.
I know. My back's turned. I know. I usually do it at the register. But
that's what I'm saying. So we have to trust a little bit here. And again, the technology is there protecting.
Well, I was going to say I've worked with some of our own clients on PCI compliance. I mean, I'm one of the guys that does that at Tab for the customers.
Right.
And I can tell you, in every instance with somebody that I've worked with at any of the businesses we work with, they are compliant.
Right.
And you are... In most cases, I can't even see how a hacker would ever get a credit card out of their systems.
Not anymore.
No, because everything is tokenized, and they're not going to have that number.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have just some code number that generated the transaction, And that code verifies that transaction, but it doesn't contain your account information. There's nothing there for them to get
right.
to then start, you know, ripping money out of your account. There's so, just well, nothing sounds, there.
Yeah. It's that much better.
Like the virtual that I use for Amazon.
Well, yeah, it works, but he's talking about real credit cards. So it works beautifully yeah. either way, Joyce. So you, I would say you should be comfortable in paying okay. Your vendor.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate
right.
it.
You're welcome, Joyce. All right. Bye-bye. They're good questions, though, these days.
Yeah. I mean, it's good to be conscious of this, but yes. Things are a little bit different now than they were just even a few years ago. Because
mm-hmm.
PCI compliance is now, I mean, it's completely revolved over the last 5 years.
And they charge you more as a vendor. If you're using their credit card as a merchant service, if you're not PCI compliant or at least PCI compliant to a certain level, you're going to have a higher fee on your transactions if you do so. So your actual folks who are providing services are very much incentivized to get things corrected. So we're going to step out for a quick break. Mark and Glenn, hang on. Two lines open for you, 860-522-9842, or WTIC is the number. Everything's been posted over at computertalkwithtab.com. It's the name of the show.com, which also works. If you are on Facebook and you want to join the Computer Talk with Tab listener network, just ask us. And if you're not a crackpot, we'll let you in. And all the links are posted there by Mike G. And if you follow us on X at Tab Computer Sys, they're there as well. So, and of course, download the Odyssey app, and you can listen to 600-some-odd episodes in perpetuity. We'll be right back. And we are back here till 11 o'clock. Feel free to get online, 860-522-9842. And Dennis and I will help you out with your computer comments, questions, and concerns. And let's go to your calls. Who's been on the longest? I can't tell who's been on the longest. The call screen's down again for me, but I can see you on the phone here. I'm going to go to Mark in Bristol. Hey, Mark.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
You know, I was thinking about getting a laptop, but the only thing that stopped me is, that, do I have to use Microsoft? I mean, they seem like such charlatans.
You can use other operating systems. There is Chromebooks out there, which I'm not that excited about. When they become Android operating systems, I think you'll be happier. You could use a Linux operating system, which is like Android. Like it's kind of Linux-esque or Apple-esque. Dennis doesn't like that, my analogy, but it's not Microsoft.
I wouldn't say that.
All right, that's fine. But you could use a Linux OS. But if you're not familiar with those types of things, it's going to be more trouble than it's worth. So I think you're stuck with the devil you know.
I just don't have to buy a laptop. I don't trust or like Microsoft at all.
Yeah,
I want nothing to do with them.
They're it's a love hate relationship with me and Microsoft, as you might tell, because I'm more interested in productivity and helping our clients be productive rather than upgrade their workstations all the time.
I almost knocked down a awning here.
Jeez, careful.
Yeah, so that was my major question and stuff, and I don't think I'm going to do it. I think I'll just wait until something better comes along.
Well, keep an eye out for the Android laptops. I suspect those are in the future. Google and Android have said they're going to merge them together to be an operating system. I don't know when we're going to see those, but when that comes out, that will be a big, huge competitor to Microsoft, much to Microsoft's chagrin.
And there'll be a while before they turn into charlatans, huh?
No, they're just as bad.
Oh, are they?
So all these companies like Google, you're the commodity, Mark, right? Are they interested in helping you be productive and actually help you make a Word document or an Excel spreadsheet? In the old days, Microsoft was interested in that. Nowadays, they're interested in what is on your Excel spreadsheet, what you're writing about, or where you're going, or where you're located, or what you're looking
at.
And
it's about attaching a revenue stream to those spreadsheets that you're generating.
Yeah, so their point of view has changed a lot. Google used to have the thing, right? Don't be evil or something like that.
Don't be evil.
But they actually expressly removed that from their company's thoughts.
Did.
Yeah. So, you know, I think they're all going to be in the same boats. They're all multi-trillion-dollar companies, which I don't begrudge. They earned that. But unfortunately, until we find another alternative, there are always alternatives, right? There's that yin and yang out there. It's just there's not a big enough operating system alternative. Apple would be the other one.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, you might want to consider getting a Mac.
Yeah. You can look at Apple. They have a whole different philosophy, and they have a whole different approach to computers. They've got beautiful technology and very secure technology and just a little more expensive, but you get what you pay for.
I have an Apple phone, so
that may make some sense for you.
Well, you may want to get a Mac.
Yeah. all I want to do is, you know, like I do my finances still the old-fashioned way, a notebook, and that, you know, figure out my expenses of income and outcome and stuff. And
by paper and pencil, you mean?
Yeah, and only some stupid games and this and that. And I look at a lot of maps because I'm a trucker.
Ah.
So. Yeah. All right. Well, maybe I'll look into Apple. That sounds better than anything. Sounds better than Microsoft. My God.
There you go, Mark.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
You got it, sir. All right. Yeah, he's out there doing something. but, you know, we need alternatives, and the market produces them. So eventually there will be enough of alternatives out there. So you really have the three. Google's got the most install base out there with the Android platform. Apple's pretty high too, but Microsoft is out there. So it's really the three platforms that are out there, unless there's another one I'm missing.
Well, there is the Linux that you mentioned, but what I was going to say is, I mean, you can use a Linux computer, you can do a lot of things with it, but there's a lot of software out there that a lot of people like to use that doesn't necessarily work on Linux. If you want to use Quicken to handle your finances, good luck, because it ain't going to work.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just one title that I can think of. So,
that's a good point. Let's go on to Glenn next in New Britain. What's happening, Glenn? Glenn, you there? Uh-oh.
Oh.
Glenn might have fallen asleep. All right, we'll put Glenn back on hold. Maybe he'll realize. So feel free to get online, guys. 860-522-9842 is the number. Speaking of our folks at Google, there's a little story right in front of me here from PC Magazine. A jury orders Google to pay $425 million in data privacy class action lawsuit. So all these class actions are coming to roost. So this lawsuit was filed in 2020. And it accused Google of collecting search and activity history even after folks had disabled the tracking from their Google accounts. And so they had their day in court, or in this case, their years in court. And the jury has said you need to pay $425 million to folks who have said, turn off the tracking. And again, this is just another example of these companies. Why are they so interested in where you're going and what you're searching for? Unless they're selling it to somebody else. They're supposed to be serving up searches, right? The search engine was purely to be helpful to you, Dennis, not to be helpful to Google.
Right.
But turns out Google was making a lot of money on it. So the class action covers about 98 million users and 174 million devices. And the plaintiffs, just so you know, Dennis, had demanded $31 billion in damage.
Billion with a B.
With a B.
Oh.
For data collected between 2016 and 2024. However, the jury ruled against punitive damages as it found Google had not acted with malicious intent.
Really?
They weren't being malicious, Dennis.
They weren't really being evil. They were just kind of being evil.
Yeah, they just said when you wanted to opt out, they just ignored you. But that's not malicious. What would you call that? If they ignore what you tell them the setting to do, it's not malicious. It was a oopsie?
I guess so.
It's a oopsie from the multi-trillion dollar company. $425 million drop in the bucket. Google probably won't pay it, but they've been ordered to pay. We'll see what happens. Anything else you want to bring up, Dennis, before we get to the top of the hour?
Oh, yeah. Story that I saw this week that kind of, I was wondering if it was old news.
Yeah.
Bridgestone was subject to a cyber attack, the tire company.
The tire company.
And I remembered a couple of years ago that they had suffered a cyber attack.
Mm.
So I'm wondering, you know, is this just old news that gets recycled?
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not. This is a new cyber attack. They were subjected to after the cyber attack that they resolved a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of facilities that they've got that were shut down, at least briefly.
Yeah.
What I'm interested in is knowing what the impact was of this attack versus the other one, which was pretty bad at the time. Did they learn any lessons from that, and were they able to mitigate it quicker?
Gotcha.
Because they're still going to be attacked.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to happen to them.
Did they report that to the state of Maine? Is that how we found out?
No. I think there was local reporting in some areas about the facilities that were shut down, and that kind of triggered it.
Gotcha. We'll put the links up to these stories for you guys. Glenn, we'll get to you after the news. We're going to check on you. I'll have Carolyn see what's going on there. We'll pick you up after the news. Three lines open for you guys, 860-522-9842. Please mark your calendar, September 20th. At Tab Computer Systems World Headquarters in East Hartford, we will take your electronic garbage off your hands for free. keep them out of the landfill, and responsibly recycle them with our partner Environmental Office. We'll be right back.